I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello there. Welcome to Wine Times, brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. I'm Annika Rice.
And I'm Will Lyons, the Sunday Times wine columnist and vice president of the Sunday Times Wine Club. Throughout this series, we'll be sharing our love of wine and travel with a host of special guests.
From comics, actors, novelists and more, we'll be hearing about their travelling adventures, giving you a real feel for each region and, more importantly, a taste of it. Thanks to Will and his stash of wine.
We're here in London Bridge, our own two-storey wine bar, tap and bottle. It has a lively, bustling atmosphere and plenty of character. The perfect spot to pour the wine and have a good time.
Well, discussing and decanting today with Will and myself is the psychotherapist, the author, the TV presenter, the journalist and the artist, Philippa Perry. That sounds very impressive, doesn't it? And of course, I met you under the umbrella of art, being an artist on Grayson's Art Club.
We did meet there. We had met before, but we did meet again then.
Oh, had we met before that?
Oh, yes, we met in the countryside. You were at a country weekend away with my neighbour.
With John Napier, the theatre designer.
Indeed.
That's right. And we came to supper.
You did.
No, sorry, I always forget that for some
and
reason.
And then we've also met at the Chelsea Flower Show a few times.
Now it's just getting embarrassing. Okay, but when we...
But you know, obviously if I don't make an impression, that's fine.
When we really met after Grayson's Art Club,
we really bonded, didn't we?
I sort of slightly fell in love with you.
Yeah, we had a bit of a bond.
Yeah, there we
go. It's where we cemented our relationship.
I know. Anyway, Philippa Perry, I've also saw her very recently because you had a book launch for your new book, The Book You Want Everyone You Love to Read. You do like a kind of tangy title, don't you?
I just want to do what it says on the tin, you know?
Yeah. No, fair enough. Because another, you know, of your best-selling books, The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read.
Yeah.
That does what it says.
And you
on the
do
tin.
Wish your parents had read it.
Absolutely. And then you've done Couch Fiction.
I have. That was a graphic novel. And I've also done a book called How to Stay Sane.
That's the one I need to read immediately. But you're also the Observer's resident agony aunt. We all know who Philippa Perry is, and we're delighted that you're here today to talk about wine. And what I've been doing is sort of curating each region of wine we're discussing with the guest. And what I love most about you, if you just went, well, we just go to Eastbourne every year for our holidays. You know, everyone else was talking about Tuscany or, you know, trips to Greece or camping in America or wherever. And you just went, no, Eastbourne.
Eastbourne.
Tell us about
4 weeks in Eastbourne.
Tell us about it.
On the shingle. Delightful. Bracing winds up on the downs. Towards September, you start picking blackberries. What could be finer?
And it really is shingle, isn't it?
Yes, it's shingle. If it was sand, other people would be there and that would be terrible. But it's shingle, so it's great.
And why Eastbourne?
Well, it's got a good railway service.
Okay, because you really are ambitious with your travel.
I am. It's Britain's sunny seaside coast.
Yeah. You're in the heart of English wine?
In the heart of English wine. Yeah. That must be it, Will. Yeah. That must be why I go there.
Which is why, actually, because we're discussing English wines today. Will and I were secretly rather relieved when you said England, because we thought, this is what we need, someone who holidays locally, can tell us all about the region. We've put you down for the whole of the south of England, basically.
You know, so, I'm not very ambitious
good
in
luck
my travels,
with that.
Even when I'm there, you know.
So we are discussing English wines, which have just taken taken off, haven't they?
Yeah, they have actually. And it's around Eastbourne, sort of Sussex, Kent, which were the first two counties, I think, to really make their name for English wine.
Yeah.
And I think we're in now in the sort of third phase. I mean, it's amazing. We are living through the great English wine boom of the 21st century. And it's incredible to watch and to live through. And we ought to celebrate it.
Well, let's do that. What have you got?
So, well, actually, we're starting not in Sussex or Kent. We're going up to an area of England, which I think will probably in the next 10 years emerge as one of the great areas. We're going up to sort of East Anglia.
Is this when climate change really takes off?
Yeah,
and,
well,
it'll get nice and warm for those ripening vines.
I mean, we thought we talk about climate change, but we need to put a D on the end because the climate has changed.
Okay.
So if you actually look at the weather records, we have the same climates as they did in Champagne in the 1970s.
Wow.
So it's now warm enough to ripen grapes in England.
Wow.
It used to be, you know, the sort of cutoff area was Champagne, which is 90 miles northeast of Paris. But now it's pushed a couple of hundred miles further north.
It's brilliant. Well, now, listen, get pouring.
Let me pour it. So this is actually, you can hear, this is a screw cap.
I love a screw cap. I don't know very much about wine, but I know if you buy the most expensive screw cap, you're onto something.
Yeah, absolutely.
While Will's just pouring that out, can we just go back to your sort of travel, you know, barriers, in that even your gap year you spent actually in Oxford Circus flipping burgers for McDonald's.
That's
you didn't
right.
even go overseas.
I travelled the world flipping burgers because people from every part of the world were flipping burgers with me. So why travel when everyone's here? I'm a people person, so I find the people quite close to home.
Yeah. Life's about the people around you. It's not around the pagoda.
I know there are people in Tuscany, but when there's people in Eastbourne, why go that far?
She's selling it well. And you're about to sell us these wines, I know.
Well, so as I was saying, the sort of famous counties, I suppose, for English wine would be Kent, Sussex and Hampshire. But we're starting in an area which is getting a little bit of media attention and focus. And I think will emerge in the next 10 years as one of the great areas for English wine. And we're in Essex. And we're actually not starting with a sparkling wine. We're starting with a still wine. So if we think about the story of English wine, obviously the Romans had vineyards in Essex. There are a number of vineyards mentioned in the Domesday Book. But it all started sort of in the 50s when you had amateur enthusiasts, people like Sir Guy Salisbury Jones, who had Hambledon Vineyard in Hampshire. And going further forward to the 70s, there was a chap called Bernard Theobald, who had a vineyard near Pangbourne in Berkshire. And he likened the climate of Reading to the climate of Bordeaux. And he was laughed out the room. But actually, he was ahead of his time because now we have vineyards in Berkshire.
Ahead of his time
as well.
By how many hundreds of years?
By 40 years. But as I said, I think we now have 943 vineyards in England and Wales. And on a good year, we produce around 15 million bottles. But not only do we have world-class sparkling, which we're going to come on to, we're also making, I think, some interesting still wines. And this is sort of,
this is one of them. Now, I better warn, the foreplay of, of Will leading up to actually taking a sip can take about 25 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to
put it down.
You want to go and have a pee or we could go and have a cup of coffee and come back by the time he's finished. But there's a lot of swilling.
Should we do some swilling? And the swilling is to what? Get the oxygenated?
To get the aroma out, actually. Is it what you want?
Make it smell.
Make it smell.
It certainly smells.
It smells. If you think back to the 70s.
It smells a bit like cleaning fluid.
Oh, well, crikey, well, that's not good, is it?
No, cleaning fluid these days smells delicious.
Well, hang on.
Sort of citrusy, you know? It is citrusy.
So, if you think back of...
Will's actually horrified.
No, I was just going to tear it up, and then I was going to talk about...
He's tearing up, actually. I'm really upset.
No, not at all.
I like the smell of cleaning fluid.
So if you think about England, you know, it's a cool climate. We have lots of rain here, and it has got a little bit warmer. But when they first started planting grapes, they looked to other cool climate regions. And the obvious country that everyone was looking to was Germany. And so originally in the sort of 70s and 80s, those early pioneers of English wine were planting German grape varieties like Müller Thurgau and Silvaner and Richardstein and grape varieties that A, no one had ever heard of, but B, they couldn't really really pronounce either. And it was only then that they started to make sparkling wine. But one great variety that has survived from that period is what we have in our glass, Bacchus. But Philippa, it's not a wine that everyone likes. And it does get a bit of a bad press.
But isn't this the wine that...
It's actually... changing as it's been oxygenated. Because it started quite sharp and lemony.
We've gone from cleaning fluids
absolutely right.
And now it's getting a bit of a fuller, deeper smell. Yes. It started quite high up with its citrusy notes, aka
we're on a piano here,
method
I think.
Cleaning. And now
it's not
going roundy oaky at all though.
But
it's like a Sauvignon Blanc or a
It has been likened to a Sauvignon Blanc, this particular
grape. You're absolutely right.
And I haven't even smelled it. I haven't even tasted it yet.
These are perfect. So, you know, when we talk about, we shouldn't really go on about it, but we can, cleaning fluid. It's essentially that sort of lime.
Fresh
lime character. We're recording this podcast at the beginning of November, but it's a glorious sunny day. And this, for me, Bacchus, comes into its own sort of mid-April, to mid-June. It's an early spring. We mentioned the Chelsea Flower Show. This would be perfect to serve at the Chelsea Flower Show because it's light.
Do you think, Annika?
Zesty.
Have you had a sip yet? I haven't.
I'm just going to wait till we get going. Right, we're still smelling.
Minute, you don't have to consume it because 70% of the taste and flavour of a wine comes from your sense of smell. Anyway, I'm going to have a real slurp.
Have you tasted?
I've tasted.
And she didn't spit.
I didn't. God, I only took the tiniest bit.
Mm.
Oh, you're going to spit. Well, I think I'll take a bigger bit and
now,
spit.
Now, I think there is a note I always get in this. And it's a vegetable I ate last night, actually. Mm.
Okay, let's guess. Let's try and get... that's gone right down your front.
I brought in Sainsbury's.
Oh, God. I was trying to spit. I'm not used to it.
So it's Bacchus. So it's...
Hang on, I want to know which vegetable you had last. No, let's try and guess. You had a vegetable last night that's...
I bought it in Sainsbury's.
I think it was a raw sprout,
but you can get vegetables in all...
Was it a raw sprout?
A raw sprout.
Hang on, no, don't tell me. Fennel?
Fennel? Oh, it's nice.
I'm not getting any fennel.
No, I'm not. I was just desperately trying to keep in the conversation.
And I might be wrong on this.
Literally don't know where Will's going on this.
He's in the aisle at Sainsbury's.
What is it a vegetable? Or is it a fruit? It's cucumber. I think you get a cucumber. Oh, the texture is a bit like cucumber.
I eat a lot of cucumber.
Yeah, that's not cucumber.
And cucumber is never this sharp.
Mm.
Cucumbers.
Is it the flavour behind the sharpness that's cucumber? That's just wet. That's what cucumber is, wet. You spit so elegantly. I got it all over my shirt when I had a go.
I should have given you some instructions because if you want to learn to spit properly, you do it in the bath.
But you take a very big mouthful.
Oh, well, bring on a bath then. Why not?
It's not going well, is it?
I don't like it.
No, you don't have to like it.
I don't have to like it, but if somebody gave it to me, I'd say yes. Because when I want to drink, I don't usually mind what it is.
Yeah, and also, as you say, perhaps it is sunny today on a November today, but let's think April, May.
April, May.
Would that change our thoughts?
Maybe have it with some smoked salmon bellinis?
No. I've got a friend in near Eastbourne, actually. Mm. She's very fond of a Sauvignon Blanc, and she would love this. And I think I've actually seen Bacchus in her fridge.
Yeah.
And I like normally more rounder, like a Chablis or a Bordeaux or something like that. And so we usually, if we're sharing a bottle, we usually compromise on a Sancerre.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. If you like this, you might also like that.
Yes, sort of, but that's sort of halfway between. But this, she would love this. I know she would. It's a sharp one. If you like a sharp one, you'll like this.
Okay.
But how about the screw cap? Sorry, I was going to ask you
a
question.
Oh, I love the screw cap.
And it's in a paper bottle.
It's pretty, isn't it?
So this is the...
what do you mean a paper bottle?
2021 English white wine
it's
from paper the Red Brick.
It's paper wrapped around a glass bottle.
It's paper wrapped around... No, but it's completely recyclable.
There's just a bag.
Yeah,
it's a wine bag. It's a wine box in the shape of a bottle.
It's a wine box
well,
in
I
the
love
shape of a bottle.
I love the innovation. I am a wine box fan. So it might have gone up a thing. The other thing is the screw top means that they're very fond of it because you only put your best wines in a screw top. So it's like a wine box, like the silver thing of the wine box with a cardboard bottle around it.
Which has been beautifully designed
to make it look like a bottle.
And birds.
So it's no better than it ought to be, this wine, is it?
So it's more sustainable, it's lighter, And for a wine like Bacchus, which you're going to drink within the first year of its life anyway, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to buy that from my Eastbourne friend.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you grow up with the knowledge of wine at all?
I'm afraid I grew up with wine because when we went to northern France, it was cheaper than the bottled water and you couldn't drink tap water then. So my father insisted that we had our water wind down with a bit of Vin Ordinaire Rouge.
Okay.
So I got a taste for it far too young.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, about six, I'd say.
Okay. So you
slept
had
like
been,
a log as
you
a
had
child.
Been overseas. That, you know, all
young.
This chat about England, you had dipped
I've
your toe across
it.
The channel.
I've done it. I've been there. Yeah. I've done that. I've come home.
Your parents, obviously, I'm just presuming you're a bit of a handful because they just sent you off to finishing school.
They sent me off to boarding school aged 9. But they sent all the children in the families off to boarding school as soon as they possibly could. The boys went at 6. I was lucky. And we were very, very homesick.
Yeah. Mm. And then you were sent off to Switzerland, was it?
Yes,
to
finishing school. Yes. Because I was so dyslexic, they felt she'll never get any A-levels. So they sent me off to finishing school when I was 15.
Yeah.
Where I learnt to parler français. And I don't like Swiss wine. Not particularly. It's not that nice, is it?
But I'm deducing a style here that you don't like, which is absolutely fair enough, in that Switzerland, like England, has these sort of lighter, high acidity, refreshing wine. You need to be heading to the Southern Hemisphere or to the Burgundy, which you mentioned.
I do.
California.
I have
where
had
got
a couple of weeks
rich...
in bone drinking.
I bet
it was jolly good.
Do you know, I had a wine last night, which you would love.
What was that?
And I gave it to my mother, who's taking it to the Bridge Club today. It's a white Burgundy from Saint-Aubin, a village called Saint-Aubin, but it was just full of creamy, oaky character.
It was. It sounds a little bit like a poor man's Montrachet.
Yes, it exactly what it is.
Oh, gorgeous. I'll write that down.
And for someone who, when you arrived, Philippa, you said, I don't know anything about wine except Vin Ordinaire and house white.
That was me being funny.
That was me being very funny. I've been alive
for 66 years. Yeah. So I have picked something up without specialising.
And drunk a lot along
I'm
the
afraid
route.
I have. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I love the way when I went round to your house quite recently, it was about
4 o'clock
in the afternoon.
You're going to show me up.
No, it was very nice. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's very funny because I was with my youngest son who'd just been giving me a lecture about how he was worried I was becoming a bit insular because I was going to bed quite early and he thought I was drinking too much. And I was just going, honestly, it's the age, you know, my generation. Anyway, we knock on the door at Philippa's house at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and she comes to the door with slight drool down her mouth because she's been having a nap.
Absolutely.
And then I said, and we say, where's Grayson? And you go, he's having a nap in his studio. And then you say, what do you want to drink?
Your son's horrified by
this.
No,
but no, my son is brilliant because it turned round. Because,
you know why I say, what do you want to drink? Because opening a bottle of wine is so much easier than all the kerfuffle of coffee or tea.
Yes. Yeah. But by the time we left, my son turned to me and said, OK, I get it now.
Nice little drink at 4, bed by 8. Marvellous.
This is Wine Times with Annika Rice.
And Will Lyons.
We'll be back with more great wine and conversations before you even get a chance to top up your glass.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, oh, a very small bottle has come out now.
It's a half bottle. So we've slightly done this back to front in that we've done the third phase of English wine, which is what I think pretty good, interesting, still wine. But it was an American couple in 1986 called Stuart and Sandy Moss, who had made a fortune in dental implants in, I think, Chicago, came to England, bought this wonderful medieval manor called Nightimber, which had a vineyard attached. And they were making, I think they were, at the time they were making still wine. And in that true can-do American style, they just looked 100 miles over the channel and said, why don't we do what they do in the world's largest sparkling wine region, Champagne, and we'll see how it goes. And I think their first few vintages were written in the early 90s. And certainly by the late 90s, it was gaining traction. I remember hosting a tasting in Fulham, and I had a Nightimber, which I bought at Berry Brothers and Rudd from St. James's Street. And this was the one that really lit the touch paper for English sparkling wine.
And how does it work cost-wise? Because we're not thinking of British wines as being very
I mean, they are not cheap. And I don't think they should be cheap because we have a lot of setup costs that they don't have in Champagne because they've been going for 200 years. Because you've got to buy the land, which is incredibly expensive.
Of course,
then you've got all the setup costs of building a winery.
Yeah.
Then you've got your labour costs, which are expensive.
I'm getting quite ready for it.
That's part of the foreplay.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good time for our coffee.
Let's have the pop now.
Let's have the pop. Here we are.
So you did that very quietly.
Well, so what you do is you...
He's very quiet with his foreplay.
It is.
Yeah. Well, she take the cage off, it's live. So I always get nervous when people are like, you know, because
just go through the ceiling.
Or hit you in the eye.
So this is our celebration moment. You being here, your holidays in Eastbourne, and my new book. And your new book. It's all going very well.
So let's have a, yeah.
Oh, he's going in.
I'm just
going
to go straight in, actually.
You can actually swallow.
I
tried to spit it out, but I don't know, it just slipped down.
So you still have that sort of brisk acidity.
You've got a brisk acidity, but it's tempered with yeast.
Yeah.
But it's not too much yeast. I've had some English wines, I've found them too yeasty. This one has got just enough.
And it's very elegant.
It's very elegant, isn't it? Yeah.
And don't you think a half bottle is a wonderful thing?
I like the one down smaller, which is a third of the bottle.
Yeah.
And then that's just right for getting me through Strictly Come Dancing. Which is what you need to get through Strictly Come Dancing. You can't watch it without alcohol, I find.
It is a lovely thing, isn't it? A half bottle.
Yeah,
because I'd forgotten the joy of it, because I do remember back in the 80s and 90s, that was the choice of size, I guess, if there were just two of you drinking.
Just two of you, just have a half bottle.
Well, if one of you's drinking that and the other's drinking red wine or something, it just gives you more options, doesn't it?
I think...
that's very nice.
Isn't it that if you're on your own, a glass feels a little bit too much. If there's two of you, half a bottle isn't quite enough.
Yeah.
If there's three of you, you need two bottles. And then if you're having a party, you need a bottle each.
Yes.
That's how you cater,
Oh, definitely a bottle.
Yeah.
I think, was it Churchill that said a magnum was perfect size for lunch alone?
Well, he was an alcoholic.
Which is two bottles. And then the largest one is Nebuchadnezzar, which
How
is
bottles?
20 bottles.
That's a big bottle.
And they actually have to...
And quite difficult
to pass
around.
They have to pour the wine into it. You know, not everyone makes a Nebuchadnezzar.
I keep gulping it, swilling it around my mouth and spitting it out. Mm. And it's actually quite a good way of enjoying wine, I've decided. You don't actually have to swallow any of it. This is the best diet ever.
Welcome to my world, don't you?
Oh, I think this is very elegant. Do you want another spit?
Have
another gulp. Another spit.
I'm getting into it now.
It's almost like I haven't...
This is the first time I've spat.
I haven't swallowed any of this, right?
Yeah.
But weirdly, I feel my energy rising as though I've had a drink.
Well, you must...
What's that about?
It's your brain.
It's your brain.
Your brain's just gone into, it's the numbskulls. You remember the numbskulls in the Beano? The numbskulls in your brain are going,
alcohol alert, Philippa's on the alcohol again, it's going to be fun, fun, fun. And they don't realise that you're spitting
it out. I love my new diet. Yeah. It's great.
But you do ingest through your gums and tongue.
Oh, damn. Yeah,
a little bit.
That'll be it.
Should we bring it round to wine number three? This is the new kid on the block, isn't it?
So we've had the England's most famous wine. I mean, I think Knight & Bernal sponsors some big sporting events and you'll see it everywhere. This is Harrow & Hope, created by Henry and Kay Lathwaite. And Henry Lathwaite always wanted to be a winemaker. His father founded the Sunday Times Wine Club. But he had visions, obviously, growing up in England in the 80s, that he'd be a winemaker in France or Australia.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I think he had a family, he thought, oh, hang on, we could make a go of it in England. And he found a site in Buckinghamshire, just above Marlow.
So we're sort of in the... It's warm, though.
Warm, in the Thames Valley.
What's the soil?
The soil is it's sort of chalky.
Oh, is it still chalky? Because it's the North Downs there, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a lot of flint as well, I think. That's why he called it Harrow & Hope, because it's hard work to...
I'm struggling to open this.
I know. Well, while
do you want me to have a go?
I was going to say, while you have a good screw there, I'll just say that I heard Tony Lathwaite being interviewed about the Sunday Times Wine Club celebrating its 50th anniversary. I heard him being interviewed this morning, and I was gripping, and his whole involvement with it started with him writing a letter to the Times, you know, those dear sir, and saying what's going on with the sort of wine tasting and where all these wines coming from, because it was totally unregulated in those days, so you could import some Algerian wine and just pass it off as a Bordeaux.
So before
what, stick a label on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think the law was...
That's only 60 years ago, 50 years ago.
Before we entered the EC, the law was as long as the wine merchant selling the wine was confident that the wine in the bottle was what it said on the label, they could sell it. Yeah. So there's bottling plants all over the place. I think one year, a lot of Châteauneuf du Pape was all bottled in Norwich.
But isn't that extraordinary? So that was Tony. So this is his
But now son's we're not in the EU anymore. Presumably, we can go back to these bad old days.
Well, who knows? Well, I'm really struggling with this. I'm going to stand up.
Sorry, stand up. Should we get a nutcracker?
Do we need to help you? Do you want?
There'll be a nutcracker downstairs that we can wrench it off with. Is that sacrilege?
He says you're going out of the room to do this.
I might just prize this off.
Yeah, good luck.
I'm getting really desperate to try this one.
Here we go.
Oh, you've done it.
Yeah, and I'm just going to...
Whoa. Oh. Right, what have we got here?
Think you might like this one. You might prefer this one.
Very nice. Very, very nice smell.
And smells drier immediately.
Smells like champagne.
Whereas the other one was Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. This is called on the bottle... a Blanc de Blanc. Now, what does that mean?
Does it mean a bit more Chardonnay?
It means it's 100% Chardonnay. So whenever you see Blanc de Blanc on a sparkling wine, it's a hun. Oh. And if you think about those grape varieties, what they impart, Pinot Noir imparts the power, Meunier the floral character, and Chardonnay is that creamy, rich texture. And some apple notes as well. Pass so that's over. What. So Blanc de Blancs tend to be richer, and more fuller, and more sort of like a Morisot.
This is delicious.
Yeah.
This is what I want.
I'm having to
spit so quickly before I just swallow it. This is delicious.
It's got that yeastiness, but not too much.
This has got a roundness that the what was the other one called? The one beginning with N.
It was called Knight & Bernal.
Yeah, the Knight & Bernal. It was nice, but it was a bit crisp for me. My personal taste. This one, which is called the
Harrow & Hope.
Harrow & Hope alliterative. This is what I'm.
What I was going to say is that what you need to, if you have one takeaway today.
I love this.
It's that you should be ordering Blanc de Blanc whenever you're in a restaurant or you want to, because you love that 100% Chardonnay. And the other thing you would like.
That's very good advice. Thank you.
You would like Chardonnay from Sonoma.
Where's Sonoma?
So that's north of Napa. Sorry,
Napa?
We've just flown out of England.
Is it near Essex?
Yes.
We were last in Essex.
Yeah, is it Essex? Is it Sussex?
That's Napa in East Essex.
Yeah. Napa Valley? Where's that? I've heard of the Napa Valley.
Where is Napa?
It's in California.
California?
So we're about an hour and a half north of San Francisco.
I bet that's delicious around there, is it?
Oh, yeah. And I think you would love those.
I think a little wine tasting trek for my next holiday, obviously not the main summer one, which has to go in Eastbourne, but
round California tasting wine.
Oh, yeah, that would be good. But also you could do it round Britain. You could go up to Essex and then on to Buckinghamshire.
Do it on a bicycle.
Back to Eastbourne. Yeah. You could build that into your holiday.
And you could do Gloucestershire. And actually, this later this month, I'm going up to Yorkshire to taste some of their wines.
God,
I think that's about the furthest north.
The life
you could
of
go.
Riley, Will. The life of Riley.
I mean, there's not, I think there is some vineyards in Northumberland, but that's probably too far north.
Will, I don't know anything about you.
Yeah.
So could you tell me about your relationship with wine and your relationship to the Sunday Times Wine Club?
Yes.
See, we're on to relationships now. We've got to the therapy we've all been waiting for.
So it was a Scotsman who introduced me to wine. In my penultimate, my last year at school, we had a wine tasting society. Can you believe that?
Oh, God, how pretentious.
And then we had to,
Did you play golf as well at school?
No, you could play golf. And you could play fives.
I mean, that sort of narrows schools down, isn't it? There's a wine tasting society and you can play golf.
We played fives and cricket and football. When I went out to university, I thought I would keep, a bit like golf, I would keep my interest in wine, like you would have develop a golf handicap. I mean, I don't play golf really.
Can I just say, to keep this real, because we've had two boarding schools, I went to Croydon High School.
Just to
bring it down to earth, because it's just got a bit rarefied.
You had the privileged upbringing. We were wrenched away from our homes. And we had the homesickness. The Wine Society is just a little, you know.
So the Wine Society at Edinburgh University was actually quite serious. And we had a tasting every week and an outside speaker. And I ended up running it. And then I ended up doing blind tasting. But at the end of it, I always wanted to write and be a journalist.
Yeah.
During my time at university, I got a job with a very smart wine merchant called Justerini and Brooks, who were on St. James's Street and also had a branch in Edinburgh. And they offered me a contract. And I remember Tom Gilby, the managing director, said, well, I would take it. And I said, well, absolutely. And I thought I'd do that for a year. And I ended up doing it for 3 years. And then gave it up. And I went back to university to train as a journalist, thinking I would just be like a journalist. Yeah. And again, wine would be part of my life, like golf is to some people, for some people. But every editor I had said, well, you've done your wine exams, you've been in the trade. Why don't you do the wine column? So I started writing a wine column, age 26, first for a newspaper in Scotland called Scotland Sunday, then the Wall Street Journal, and now the Sunday Times.
But isn't that wonderful that, your interest fed your career like that?
Yeah, in a way, it's been extremely lucky. But I didn't do it full time for many years. I think people thought I did. I combined it with business journalism, and also arts journalism I did for a bit. And I did the column on the side. I used to write it on a Sunday night. And then the Sunday Times asked me to be columnist for them and be so what's called vice president of the Sunday Times Wine Club. So I helped curate the wine for that club.
There's a lot of spitting involved. A
lot of spitting. Mm. And it's like a sermon. You have to write that column every week.
Yeah.
And I think you're quite exposed because you're asking people to buy this wine.
Yeah.
And if you have one wine that doesn't,
they don't like it.
Well, they're going to let you know. And you're only as good as your last column, and your reputation is can
don't I know that, yeah. Having a column in The Observer myself.
I mean, it's...
Can I ask
it's not
about
easy,
that?
Is it?
If you look back at all your years as an agony aunt and spotting trends, are there any?
Yes.
Tell us. Where are we
people
now?
People are more and more wanting to have a label for how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And they want a diagnosis for how they feel. Sometimes a diagnosis is very, very helpful, helps them make sense of things. Sometimes I feel people jump into their diagnosis too soon. And rather than having it to help them, it's more like making them into a victim. So if you've got a diagnosis and it opens the door to help, opens the door to techniques to make things better to you, then good. But if your diagnosis closes a door, that isn't so good.
So presumably you're talking about things like ADHD. Are you?
Oh, sometimes it's an attachment style, like, I'm insecurely attached, so I can't do relationships. I think, oh, no, please.
Is that a thing, being insecurely attached?
Yes.
Oh,
everything's a thing now.
Right. Okay.
And I think this everything's a thing is a trend that I'm keeping an eye on, that I'm worried about.
Yeah. And is that affecting how you're responding to people who
get
in touch with
you? Well, put it this way, I have to be very, very careful, because when somebody gets hold of a thing such as
I'm bipolar or something, it becomes part of their identity. So if I say maybe another diagnosis or maybe no diagnosis, it's as if I've said, maybe you're not the person you thought you were, or, you know, I'm threatening their very identity. So I'm not threatening a fact, I'm threatening a belief system. And when you threaten a fact, if I tell you the sky isn't blue, it's yellow, you'll go, yes, Phil, you know, it's not worth arguing about if I have such a different point of view because you know it's blue.
And we just know you've drunk too much and it's fine.
And it's fine. But if I say, I think you're a man, Annika, or you're a cat person, or you're a dog person when you're the other, then you'll have a bit more to argue about. Mm-hmm. If are you a dog or a cat person?
Well, I know you're a cat person. I am a dog person.
You're a dog person. So if I were to say, cat people are better than dog people, you know, we might have fisticuffs about it. Mm. Whereas if I say the sky is yellow or psychedelic or something, then you'll go, yes, dear. If I'm threatening your identity, you're not a dog person, you're a cat person, then you'll
That's
come back
irritating.
At me. So that has been a recent trend. I think the other recent trend is mobile phone addiction, which really worries me, which really is getting in the way of people's ability to do long reads.
Yes, I totally agree.
Not only books, but even long reads in newspapers and magazines. And this really worries me that, you know, people that I used to read four books a week. Mm. I'm now reading one or two.
Yeah.
I've gone down because of my mobile phone. But some people say, oh, I haven't read for a year. And I go,
I know.
What's happened to your brain?
Yeah.
If you can't concentrate enough to read a book,
we are
shattering our brains. Mm. And I think we need to put the phone down and pick up a book.
Yeah.
Because you started all your psychotherapy training after being a Samaritan for a while. Did you find that was the sort of core of everything that followed on, in that it was that intense listening experience?
Yes. And I think what it was I think I started to be a Samaritan. What's the word?
Ostensibly.
That was second guessing. Ostensibly to help people. But I realised after I'd done it, the person I wanted to help most was myself, because I wanted to find out whether it was safe to unpack your feelings and talk about them. Mm. And through listening to people doing this, I found out that it was not only safe, but it was beneficial. And then I dared to start my own therapy, which I did not dare to do before.
Philippa, what a joy to sip three, well, sip more than sip.
Sip and spit
with you this afternoon.
What a shame. We spat it all out. But it is only, it's 1:05.
1:05. We've got days ahead. So I feel we can walk. We'll do the straight line test on the way
okay,
out.
Okay, I think
safe.
I'll be fine. I still have... three full glasses of wine in front of me, because I've had several gulps and spat.
Hopefully one day we can do this podcast actually at the end of the day when we can
I would love to do it and get pissed with you.
I know, that would be so nice. Which wine will you be taking home with you today?
I will be taking home Harrow and Hope for
Henry
sure.
Davis.
Yeah, that was delicious.
The Bacchus was very interesting in its wine box in a bottle shape. The say the word for me.
The Nightimber.
The Nightimber.
It's England's most famous sparkling wine.
That was delicious, but I just preferred the roundness of Harrow and Hope. Just a personal taste thing.
Listen,
which is Blanc de Blanc.
It's so nice
having
a guest on that has such a distinctive taste. You do.
Thanks so very much.
Thank you.
Distinctive taste, you holidays in Eastbourne.
Yes, thank you very much. Every summer.
Philippa Perry, thank you very much indeed.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, that's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. The series producer is Anya Pierce. The producer, Callum McRae, and the assistant producer has been Shana Johnson.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your favourite podcast app.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wines and another great guest.
And remember that all of the wines we tasted today are noted in the episode description, and you can get your hands on all of them from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
But from all of us here at the Tap and Bottle, thank you very much for listening. We hope to see you next week for more Wine Times.
Did have a bit of a rant then, didn't I?
Well...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.